Let's turn in our Bibles again then back to the Psalms and to Psalm 62. And I want to ask just a very simple question to begin with. And I hope to answer, I hope you'll answer it as we go through the Psalm this morning. And the very simple question is, who are you trusting and how are you trusting? Who are you trusting and how are you trusting? This Psalm, like all of the Psalms that we've been looking at month by month, and the Psalms that we enjoy reading as individuals in our homes, we draw great comfort from. They're Psalms written out of a human experience. The Psalms written out of a human heart. The Psalms written by mostly by David, but by an accumulation of people as we go through the whole book, who were people just like you and me, people with feelings, people with trials, people with difficulties, people with problems, people with anxieties, people who very often felt pressing down upon them the pressures of life in the world in which they found themselves. And of course, they were also sinners, sinners separated from God by their sins, sinners who needed God's grace, sinners who needed to cry out to the living God. And Psalm 62 is such a psalm, isn't it? And we're told in the heading at the top, which we believe to be reliable, is this is one of David's psalms. So we know a bit about David. And this comes from King David and is one of the many psalms. And if we want a verse to focus on our attention this morning, the verse which will be the base from which we're going to explore the psalm, it might be verse 8. And verse 8 says, trust in him at all times, you people, pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. So, let's ask three questions about this psalm this morning. Three things that we need to notice. The first thing we need to notice is that the psalm encourages us to put our trust in God, that our trust needs to be in God. Now, you can see, here it is in verse 8, trust in him, trust in him. In some senses, the psalm breaks into two parts. I guess, really, the psalm is in three parts. You notice it's 12 verses long. At the end of verse 4, there is a Selah. That's probably a musical term, maybe suggests a pause for thought, a pause for the musicians to strike up, perhaps. There's another one at the end of verse 8, isn't there? It seems as if the psalm naturally breaks into three sections. But in those sections, David is doing two things. He's telling us to trust in God, but he's also expressing his own trust in God. You see how the psalm begins. Truly, my soul silently waits for God. So that's his position. That's his opening position in the psalm. We're going to see in a moment why he needs to trust in God. We can see in a moment the pressures that are upon him, but that's where he's beginning. He's beginning with his trusting. His soul is silently waiting for God. From him comes my salvation. So David is practicing what he's preaching. David is practicing what he's telling us that we should do in verse 8, where he tells us to trust in him at all times, you people. Why should I trust in God? Well, look at the things that the psalm says about God. So it tells us, truly my soul silently waits for God. From him comes my salvation. That's what we need. That's our biggest need. Our biggest need as men and women, boys and girls, is salvation. We need to be saved. We have sinned. We've fallen short of God's standards. We've broken God's commandments, rebelled against him. We thought just a few weeks ago, didn't we, about the law and how we've broken God's law. We saw how Saul of Tarsus had broken God's law, but how he was saved. And here it is again. From him comes my salvation. What else do we say about God? We'll look at verse 2. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be greatly moved. When you come down to verse 5 and to verse 6, you see it again. My soul waits silently for God alone, for my expectation is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be moved. Look at verse 7. In God is my salvation and my glory. The rock of my strength and my refuge is in God. It's great pictures, aren't they? A picture of a rock. What do we know about a rock? Well, a rock is solid, isn't it? A rock is dependable. We think of the story of Jesus at the end of the Sermon on the Mount about the wise man who built his house upon the sand. And we know from the children's song what happened, didn't we? How the rains came down and the floods came up. And well, it was gone, wasn't it? But the wise man built his house upon the rock. See, God is our rock. He's our salvation. He's our refuge. We think about a refuge. Maybe you've been out in town or you've been somewhere, and suddenly there's been a great storm and the rains have come down, and you think, well, where can I find shelter? Where can I go to escape the storm? And you found a place of refuge. Well, God is so much more than that, isn't he? The psalmist says, he is my refuge. Look at the end of the psalm, verses 11 and 12. What do they tell us about God? God has spoken once. Twice I have heard this, that power belongs to God. And to you, O Lord, belongs mercy. See, that's God. God is a God of power, and he's a God of mercy. It's good that those two things go together, don't they? Sometimes we see dictators in our world, don't we? And they've got plenty of power, but they've got no mercy. Power without mercy is a terrible thing, isn't it? If somebody has great power, but they're not merciful, that's bad news for everybody else. If somebody's got mercy, but they've got no power, well, what good will that do anybody? We need a God who is powerful and who is merciful, and that's the God in whom David is trusting. Where do we see that God in his fullness? Well, we have to do what we've done with all of these psalms. We've started in the psalm every month. We've started in the psalm, but then we've gone from the psalm to Jesus, haven't we? We've stepped forward 1,000 years. We've gone from David to David's great descendant. And where do we see God? Well, in Jesus Christ, all the fullness of the Godhead dwells bodily, the Bible says. Jesus, when he was here upon earth, he told people, if you have seen me, you have seen the Father. The works that I do are not my works. They're the works that the Father has given me to do. And so if we want to see the God in whom we have to trust, we need to look to Jesus. And you see, Jesus is the one through whom salvation comes, isn't he? The great truth of the scripture is that Jesus, the Jesus who came and showed his power, didn't he? Making blind people to see, making deaf people to hear, making disabled people to walk and run, raising the dead, stilling the storm, casting out the demons. The one who was powerful, the one who was all merciful, the one who, when that woman who'd been caught in adultery was dragged before him, had mercy on her, didn't he? The one who had mercy on people that nobody else would have mercy on. That's our God, and we see him in Jesus. And he goes to the cross, and he dies, he's crucified, and he does that so that you and I might be saved. That's why we sang that song just now, didn't we? We have heard the joyful sound, Jesus saves. So that's the first question. That's the first thing that this psalm tells us to do, tells us to trust in God. And then we could say, well, what's the second thing the psalm says to us? The second thing the psalm says to us is don't trust in other people. Don't put your trust in other men and women. You see, by nature, we want to trust. We've said it so many times before, haven't we? It's one of the things that we do naturally. Naturally, we trust in people. We're created with trust. That's why we trust in our parents as little infants. One of the things that we have to learn so often is that some people are not trustworthy. Just because somebody knocks on the door and makes you a promise doesn't mean to say that they're trustworthy. Just because somebody makes great promises to you doesn't mean to say they'll keep those promises. And David has come to learn that as well. As we go through this psalm, we can see that it seems perhaps there are people who were formerly his friends who've turned against him. It's certainly the case there are people who bless him with their mouths, but behind his back, they're up to all sorts, aren't they? And as he thinks about his need to trust in God, when he gets down to verse 9, he reminds himself that actually human beings, we can't put our trust in them. This is what he says in verse 9, surely men of low degree are a vapor. Men of high degree are a lie. See, David was the king. He was surrounded by all sorts of people, wasn't he? He was surrounded by those who were quite high up because he was the king. But he was also the king of people of all sorts as well. And David isn't fooled by people who are in positions of authority. He doesn't recognize that, he doesn't see that they're going to be greater than other people. No, he recognizes what people are. It's particularly when he relates them to God and he says, you know, if they're weighed on the scales, they're altogether lighter than vapor. You ever try to weigh steam? You know, the kettle's boiling, steam's coming out. Try to capture it, put it on the weighing scales. What are you going to find? Not going to register at all, is it? You can't weigh vapor. You can't weigh steam. It's gone. Cheer for a moment disappears before you can notice it. That's what he says here about such people. You know, there's always that tendency, isn't there, to put our trust in the things of this world. Paul, as he writes to Timothy, reminds us of that, doesn't he? God willing, come on to it in months' time, whenever it is. And he reminds us there, doesn't he, about not putting our trust in the things of this world. Those last verses, well, the verses that we looked at the beginning that we read from verse 6 onwards, godliness with contentment is great gain. We brought nothing into the world. It is certain we can carry nothing out. Having food and clothing with these, we shall be content. Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and in perdition. See how he goes on in verse 17. Commands those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God. See, riches, wealth, things of this world are uncertain. We've been reminded of that this week, haven't we? Quite cataclysmically, with what happened to that footballer, haven't we? You know, great footballer. Everything at his feet, all of that money that he was earning, hundreds of thousands of pounds a week, and taken from the world, and certain riches, they're gone. And it's always been the case, hasn't it? And Paul, when he writes to Timothy, he says, now, just remember, don't trust in uncertain riches. Don't trust in uncertain people. Put your trust in the living God. The living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. It's a wonderful, balanced verse, isn't it? Those lovely things that we enjoy, God gives them to us to enjoy. And we should enjoy them, but we don't put our trust in them. We don't love them. We don't make gods of them. No, no. We trust in the living God. So Psalm 62 begins by telling us to trust in God. Secondly, it warns us not to trust in others. And then thirdly, it tells us how we are to trust in him. And it does that in two very specific ways. In verse 8, this verse that we're using as our base, it tells us, trust in him at all times. At all times. Now, that's difficult, isn't it? Sometimes it's easy to trust in God. Perhaps when things are going well, when everything in the garden is rosy, when we've got our health, when we've got our family around us, when we're sailing through life and the problems aren't there, or the problems seem to be sorted out really quickly and really easily. And it's quite easy then, isn't it, to trust in God. But life's not always like that, is it? Life isn't always plain sailing. Sometimes we go through great trials and through great difficulties. David is going through difficulties and trials here, isn't he? He's under attack. Look at him in verse 3. How long will you attack a man? You see, these people have turned on him. And he says, how long are you going to be on the attack against him? Pouring out his soul before God, isn't he, in verse 8. There's that lovely balance in verse 1 and verse 8, isn't there? He's waiting silently before the Lord, but he's also pouring out his soul before him. And there are times when we must do both of those things, aren't there? There are times when we pour out our soul before God and we unburden ourselves and we cast our cares upon him because he cares for us. And we tip the whole thing out at the foot of the cross and before God. And then we wait. We wait patiently. And sometimes we just wait silently before God. That's David's experience, isn't it? But you see it, trust in him at all times. How do I trust in God? I must trust in him at all times. And I must trust in him wholly and totally. Now, what we can't see very clearly, perhaps, from Psalm 62, but if we were all Hebrew scholars, and none of us are Hebrew scholars, are we? And so I'm relying on the commentaries to pick this out. But in five of these verses, five of these verses begin with one Hebrew word which emphasizes, if you like, totalness, completeness. It starts with an adjective that, in a sense, exaggerates it. It's translated in different ways. Let me show you how it's translated. You see, verse 1, truly my soul silently waits for God. He doesn't just say my soul waits for God. He says, truly my soul waits for God. Look at verse 2. He is my rock. No, he only is my rock and my salvation. Verse 6, he only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be moved. All the way through this psalm, there are these exaggerations, in a sense, these completenesses. And what they're reminding us of is that we can't be in this half-heartedly. We talked earlier on about the picture of God as the rock. It's no good having one foot on the rock, is it? We've all seen it, haven't we, in countless sitcoms, when somebody's getting off a boat or getting into a boat, and they put their one foot down in the boat, they keep their other foot on the dry land, and the boat begins to move away, and they end up involuntarily, first of all, doing the splits and ending up in the water. You know, we can be like that with God. We can have one foot on the rock, and we can have one foot on shaky grounds. You know, the Bible tells us to trust in the Lord at all times, but it tells us to put our trust wholly in him. See, that's why Jesus came. That's why God came amongst us. Why the incarnate God came into this world. Because he's worthy of putting all our trust in him. That's why he died on the cross. That's why he rose from the dead. That's why he ascended to heaven. That's why one day he's going to come back into the world. Because we need to put our trust in him. Not in people, not in money, not in possessions, not even in God and people and money and possessions. We trust in him at all times, and we trust in him wholly and only. To do that, we've got to stop trusting in ourselves. Trusting in our good works, trusting in our own righteousnesses, trusting in our church attendance, trusting in our kind hearts or whatever else it might be. No, we're trusting in the living God. We're trusting in his Son, Jesus Christ. Let's say